From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ed Morin, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine for Monday, July 24th, 2017. And on this day, the American Civil Liberties Union of Maine is calling on Governor Paula Page to stop blocking Facebook users who disagree with him from his official page. The city of Portland considers a lawsuit against the pharmaceutical industry over super addictive synthetic opioids. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
The American Civil Liberties Union of Maine is asking Governor Paula Page to end his practice of selectively deleting negative comments and blocking certain users from his official Facebook page. In a letter to the governor, the group asserts that this amounts to censorship, and as Susan Sharon reports, the ACLU has not ruled out a lawsuit if LePage does not comply.
The ACLU says it's aware of at least three people who used the Facebook page to criticize the governor for misleading several Maine lawmakers and the media about his vacation plans during the recent state government shutdown. Their posts were then deleted, and they were blocked from further comments. Zach Hyden, the ACLU's legal director, says that's a violation of the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution and part of the Maine Constitution that guarantees the right to free expression.
The First Amendment protects people against government censorship. So because this was the official Facebook page of the governor of Maine, the First Amendment and the Maine Constitution apply and protect people against being censored.
In an email, a spokesman for the governor said the Facebook page is not managed by the office of the governor. But then he directed reporters to check the very same page for a response. It's not clear who wrote it, but the post states that this is Paula Page's official politician page, not a government page managed by taxpayer-funded state employees. It goes on to say that the page is, quote, for those who support the job-creating, budget-fixing, and pro-liberty efforts of Governor Paula Page. This page is not a tool for organized, nationally connected political protests against the governor, it says. But Zach Hyden says even the governor's own official website links to the page, which often includes posts written in the first person.
We think this is the governor's official page because he's opened it up for people to comment to him as constituents. And he's used it to communicate to constituents. He says that he uses Facebook and goes to Facebook Live as a way of bypassing the media.
The ACLU of Maine is giving the governor 2 weeks to agree to stop censoring certain views from the page and to reinstate the posting privileges of the three constituents, or Hyden says his group will take further legal action. Censorship on government social media sites is a new issue, but Hyden says courts in other states have concluded that constituent speech is protected. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Portland officials may take Big Pharma to court over super addictive synthetic opioids. Early next month, city officials will hear a staff presentation on a potential lawsuit against opioid manufacturers or distributors. Mayor Ethan Strimling says the effort might be similar to suits some cities have brought against gun manufacturers for harm their products cause local citizens. He says one goal would be to limit opioid marketing.
And the second is to see if there are resources that can be recovered to help us confront the opioid crisis. It's just brutal in the community.
Several states and municipalities are considering such lawsuits. Strimling says the plan might be to join an existing suit, but he adds that the city will need to carefully review potential litigation costs. When they return to work next week, Maine lawmakers will consider the governor's veto of the latest solar energy bill supported by environmental groups and the solar industry. Maine continues to lag behind other New England states that are encouraging solar development, especially Vermont, which has a small population but big goals for renewable energy. And as Vermont Public Radio's Kathleen Masterson reports, that seems to be attracting national solar companies that are now competing with Vermont's many homegrown solar businesses.
The Utah-based company Vivint Solar recently announced it will be offering residential installations in Vermont. CEO David Bywater says his company was attracted to Vermont's green policies.
It's always nice to have allies, you know, pushing forward the green agenda and helping just the, you know, the population adopt solar. So I'm actually embarrassed that we weren't there earlier.
The company already has a presence in the region. Vivint is the second largest residential solar installer in Massachusetts and does business in Connecticut and New York and recently expanded into Rhode Island and New Hampshire. And now Vermont. Vermont's a tiny state with a population of just over 600,000. It already has 40 installation companies working here. So at a glance, it may seem strange that national solar companies are coming to the state. But it may simply be that the state's policies to encourage solar development are working.
In 2015, Vermont was, for cumulative solar capacity per capita, was seventh in the country.
That's Sean Gallagher with the Solar Energy Industries Association. He says the residential solar market has been taking off nationally in the last few years. Gallagher says it's being driven by a combination of factors. For one, solar costs have gone down 65% in the last 5 years. And he cites new financing options like leasing that have helped more people access solar.
And then the third thing, as I mentioned, is good state policies, and Vermont's been a leader there. Vermont has a good statewide net metering policy. That's been an important driver.
Net metering rules govern how much credit homes and businesses can bring in for selling their excess solar energy back onto the grid. Vermont recently rewrote its net metering rules. The new policy prioritizes putting solar projects on landfills or brownfields. That means some projects, like building solar in a farm field, will no longer be economically viable. But for homeowners, the economic incentives remain fairly high. And Vermont recently set a lofty goal of having 90% of its energy be from renewable sources by 2050.
And when it comes to renewables, Vermont may be a small state, but it's punching above its weight.
And other national solar companies are taking notice, too. Earlier this year, Sunrun, headquartered in San Francisco, expanded into Vermont. And in 2015, California-based SolarCity started offering residential solar installations in the state. In just a few short years, SolarCity has amassed 1,000 residential customers. That's nearly half the number of projects Vermont's leading residential installer, SunCommon, has completed. Those figures don't include installations completed in 2017, which aren't compiled yet. James Moore is a co-founder of Vermont-based SunCommon.
I think it's great that other companies are looking to help Vermonters go solar. We welcomed SolarCity when they came into the market. We welcome these other national players. The reality is that we've seen most Vermonters pick a Vermont company to go solar with.
Here, I got you. Yep.
So this is a ground mount system, and it's essentially referred to as a fixed array.
That's Andrew Weibel, a co-owner of Catamount Solar, based in Randolph, Vermont. He says in some ways, larger companies coming into Vermont drive the market for all solar. For one, national companies often have a larger budget for advertising, which helps raise awareness about solar in general, and sometimes sends customers their way.
When they come in, it sort of identifies that we're a local company, and we live here. We want to take care of our community, and I think that differential is actually good for us. The competition drives our market, I think.
Weibel says with Vermont's new net metering rules, many of the commercial projects they used to work on, like putting panels on unproductive farm fields and building community solar projects, are no longer economically viable. So now the company may rely more on the residential market to drive business. And that's where the national companies coming to Vermont, like Vivint and SolarCity, are focusing their efforts too. But Weibel says Catamount Solar is looking to build a sustainable local economy, and that will appeal to some Vermonters.
Because we're going to be here, and I doubt that a lot of them will be in the future. You know, they'll ride that wave, they'll make their profit, and they'll drive away.
It's not clear if that prediction will come true. The residential market looks good right now, with low prices and regulatory incentives. But the market is volatile, and there's a big storm on the horizon. Companies are closely watching the Trump administration, which could impose tariffs on solar panels coming in from overseas. That would massively drive up the price of solar panels and stall this growing industry. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Kathleen Masterson.
The story is part of the New England News Collaborative's energy reporting project, The Big Switch. A new $69 million waste-to-energy plant that will process garbage for more than 115 communities is expected to begin accepting trash next April. Fibrite CEO Craig Stewart-Paul says the road construction system for the 144,000-square-foot Colebrook Road facility has been completed. Maine is now accepting applications for the lottery to participate in its expanded deer hunting season next year. Actually, this year, the state uses any deer permits, which allow hunters to harvest deer of either sex, to manage the population. Maine is giving out more than 66,000 of the permits this year, up from fewer than 46,000 last year. State wildlife managers say Maine is offering more deer permits this year because many deer survived recent winters. Deer are more likely to survive when the winter is mild. Online applications are due by the end of the day on August 15th. The drawing is scheduled for September 8th. The firearms hunting season starts on October 21st with Youth Deer Hunting Day. Dakota the dog's life has been spared thanks to a deal approved by a Kennebec County District Court judge. As Patty White reports, the husky, who was deemed dangerous, garnered national attention after Governor Paula Page pardoned her this spring.
Dakota ran into trouble with the law after she attacked two dogs in separate incidents, killing one. She was ordered euthanized, but a series of motions, plus Governor LePage's pardon, delayed her fate. It's unclear whether LePage has the authority to pardon a pet, but the court agreement reached Monday allows Dakota to live. Kennebec County District Attorney Megan Maloney says under the order, Dakota will not be allowed in the city of Waterville, where the attacks occurred.
The second piece that I thought was most important is that Dakota does receive training to be sure that we don't have any other pets that are harmed in the future.
Dakota will board and train at an undisclosed veterinary hospital until an expert considers her ready for adoption. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And for Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Monday, July 24th, 2017. Thanks to A.J. Higgins, Mel Leary, Keith Shortall, and our digital team, Ahmed Morin.